She gets the thumbs up. So namaste and welcome. It's good to see you all here on Mother's Day. And thank you. Thank you. Yes, my children are taking me out this evening for dinner. I have one girl and one boy. He lives close to here as well, not far. Yeah, so I guess we're all getting together, which will be interesting. No, it's all good. It's all good. I don't mean interesting as in interesting, you know. No, they're pretty good kids, actually. Who is Yogananda? Was this one of your questions? Your question. Which Yogananda? Are you speaking about the one that was here that... Yogananda was one of Ramakrishna's, I think it was with Ramakrishna's, no, that was the other one. Yogananda was a student of Yukteswar. Yukteswar was Yogananda's guru, right? Okay, get the right one here. I don't want to comment on the other one. They have two that's real popular here in the U.S., and Yogananda is one, and then there's one other one. But, yeah, his name was Yogananda Giri. He was also Giri, like mine was Swami Gangapurti Kali Uttamananda Giri. Okay, he's also Giri, which means that he became a sannyas when he was in India. And then he came over to the U.S. and started working with people and teaching. But he was teaching, I think, also the Kriya Yoga was from Yogananda's things, is it? Or is that Babaji? He was did the Self-Realization Fellowship.
Yeah, talking about the energy of seeing it through a star.
Right. Right, right, which none of that you don't need to do, but he's also, you know, works with more with Kundalini and things as well, came out of that type of a tradition. They do a lot of the Hatha, you know, Hatha type things as well, I think, over there. I think the Anand, and what's that, East-West Bookstore and the Anand Fellowship comes out of Yogananda's things. So yeah, they have the path where it's like, you know, where they're trying to follow also the bhakti yoga, the karma yoga, and the, you know, same things basically as what you're getting here. And Yogananda's fine. I mean, you can read his things, but, you know, there's no reason to sit there. I don't stress these third eye meditations because you get into too much phenomena, you know, astral stuff and all of that nonsense. But why? Yogananda himself was fine. You know, you can read anything on his life story. It was great. And his teacher, Yukteswar, was very tough. He was like me, kind of no nonsense, just, you know, right straight down the line, boom, boom, boom. Yogananda was more kind of soft. If you look at his pictures, he's very kind of feminine type of looking, very, very soft. But yeah, no, his things are fine, Yogananda. Yeah. I think a lot of people read the book about Yogananda. What was it called, that one? It's a pretty famous book. A lot of people. Yeah, Autobiography of a Yogi. It's a very good book. It's a very good book about his journey and things. Yeah. So, yeah, he's fine. Yeah. I just wouldn't, you know, gravitate to some of the practices they're, you know, Microphone.
They were just telling me so adamantly, like, he was the only guru that, you know.
The only one ever on the universe. Well, he unfortunately, he's not available any longer. He's no longer embodied.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, no, then they don't understand. That you could come back and say, no, my guru is here embodied. And she is also what Yogananda was. She is, you know. You need to have someone that's embodied. You know, it's wonderful when the teacher has left the body, then you can take whatever you want that he says and twist it anyway to fit what you want to hear. And then you don't have anyone there to correct it when you're going off and left field somewhere. This is why you want to have a teacher that's embodied. And it's wonderful. I mean, after the teacher leaves and all these other stories spring up and, you know, it grows to a legend and, you know, come and see the reality. Don't follow some legend. Come and see the reality. You know, people want to chase a legend. It's easy to chase a legend. Like Sai Baba of Shirdi. When he was alive, you know, both sides wanted to kill him. When he died, both sides wanted to claim him. You know, what to do? Same with Kabir. Kabir as well. When he was alive, both sides wanted to do away with him because he was harsh. And after he died, then you could take and do whatever you wanted with this stuff. Then both sides want to claim him. But this, you know, this happens. This happens. But no, it's better if you find a teacher that's in body. Because then they can relate with you. You can have personal contact with them. There's a transmission that continues to take place. And they can give you guidance and direction. Whereas a legend, although their words are wonderful, and what they said when they were here was wonderful, and it's all true, it's all correct, it's all wonderful, but there's no longer anyone there to give you direct guidance. So that's all. But yeah, as far as a yogi and a person, wonderful. He was very correct in what he was giving. And the winner is, oh. Could you talk about Indian gods and goddesses? Are they just symbols or are they beings from different levels of reality? Both. Both. During parts of the journey, some people that are very visual will see them manifest. Like Papaji, Punjaji, when he was young, he would play with Krishna. He said Krishna would come, and he would play with Krishna. It was his big playmate. And then he went to see Ramana. And Ramana goes, well, if it's coming and going, it's not real. Okay, if it's coming and going, then it's not real. It has no inherent substance. And at that point, Papaji gained realization. Krishna no longer appeared to him. Okay, so yeah, it can be both. They do have some sort of an existence. It can be on other planes, and it can also be symbology. What they are, you are. All of the qualities that they have, you have within you. No separation, no difference. So here, when I speak about different, you know, quote-unquote gods, goddesses, they're symbols of the path. They're symbols of qualities that you have within, that you reach in and that you, you know, pull into place. They're already inside of yourself. As I say, you know, even the gods and goddesses, They're sometimes jealous of a realized being because they're still in duality. Gods and goddesses are in duality. The realized being's given all of them up. You know, you go beyond that. It's real hard to give up bliss. It's hard to give up power. It's hard to give up being a god. You know? But yeah, there are as many realms as you can imagine. If you can imagine it, there's a realm. Okay? But go beyond all of that into the absolute and be free within yourself. Okay? Yeah. So better that you look on the gods and goddesses as symbols of the journey. Okay? Different aspects of the journey. Unless you happen to like to hang out with Krishna. Roddy says, I like Krishna. He would steal butter and he would be my friend. Because I would help him steal the butter and eat it together. Huh?
Krishna's like the fun loving one, whereas Kali would be so much like a
right, right. Well, we need the microphone, though. But yeah, Krishna is more of that love dynamic and go right with the flow and just hang loose, enjoy life, you know? Yeah.
So that's the god you want to hang out with, you know?
You
want to
hang out with Krishna? You don't want to hang out with Kali? Oh, now, come on.
I would, but it's going to be a tough day, you know? It's not going to be taking in a movie and doing some karaoke later. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be rough. So you pick the appropriate god and goddess.
Absolutely, but unless you're ready to let go of that crap, you're not going anywhere anyway. So,
that's,
you know,
true.
It just depends on what you want. You want to get there or you want to keep, you know, hanging out and playing whatever.
That's true. You can't sit around and play the flute all day and
yeah,
run
yeah,
around
you
the grass.
Can't, you can't sit there and hang out with the cows all day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, get
you
down
know.
The task.
You know, this thing that, you know, had all these gopis and they were all chasing him, you know, and they would leave their husbands and stuff and go chase Krishna. I think they had a lot of very unhappy husbands when he was around, but, you know. Yeah, got to look at both sides of this. Yeah. Which people take diksha? When people take diksha, what happens? Is it transmission of energy and knowledge? Yeah, when people take diksha, what happens is you infuse them with the energy. So there's a transmission that takes, and there's a bond that's created with the guru. Okay. So when that bond is created, then the guru takes on the ability and the responsibility of giving you guidance, of continuing to give guidance. And if you stay in contact with the guru, the transmission continues to happen, to take place on subtle levels. Anyone that's taken diksha, I think a lot of them, if they're sensitive, they'll know that a big change has come in. Things start changing immediately around them. For some, it takes a little longer to root. But eventually it does root and starts to grow. So yeah, something takes place. Diksha is not just, you know, a symbolic thing. But for each person that takes diksha, they have a different experience depending on how open they are. Okay. Knowledge comes as things fall away. Is there anything that we can do to balance back and front? By letting go of trying to balance back and front? There's nothing to balance in the end. When you let go of the nonsense of attempting to balance it, it goes in balance. What you do is you keep pulling it out of balance. You know, let go. And it'll adjust right again. This is why this is a process of letting go of everything. It's got coverings. The coverings are pulling you out of balance. The coverings are hiding that light. Okay? So quit trying so hard. If you're trying to put in balance, then what you're doing is stating that I'm out of balance. So you're substantiating it even more. You know, this is why when you come and you get energy work done here, when I'm doing energy work with people, there's no mind involved in it. It's just still. Because I'm in stillness and there's no mind and no intent, it goes and balances. Okay? It self-adjusts wherever it needs to adjust. Okay? So if you want to balance back and front, quit balancing back and front. People try too hard. You make it too complicated. I work with dying people. What is most helpful? I cannot tell them that there is no death, but I want to tell them that. Maybe give them a book by Sylvia Brown. Yeah. She speaks about, you know, she's the psychic and she's able to see people that have passed on and things. Or John Edwards, he's very good. John Edwards is very good. Because when they pass on, they're just leaving this plane for another plane. They're really not going far at all. Okay? And the ones that they've left before that have already passed will usually come and arrive to meet them, to greet them. So there's nothing to fear. Okay? They're getting rid of this worn-out, tired, hurting vehicle. And they're moving on to new experience. Okay? So you might want to look into either the books by John Edwards or Sylvia Brown that speak about this, you know, what it's like to be on the other side. I think she's got one called Lessons from the Other Side. That's really good, that she talks about, you know, when you go over there, you get a life review and all of these things happen. If somebody's had a really traumatic thing, there will be some people that will work with them if they can be reachable. You know, some people are not reachable and they remain earthbound. They're in too much turmoil. They have to be open to hear, first of all. Okay. So, yeah, either one of those would be a good resource. Yeah. Because if they read something more in black and white, they have a tendency more to, you know. Right, right. So if you're not allowed to speak about your beliefs, you know, you might just say, here's a list of books, you know, where they speak. These are people that see other realms, and this is what they see. So maybe you can get around it that way. You know, just give them a list of the books. But she's very good about going into that, and that, you know, people, they leave and they're on the other side. Or tell them to watch Montel Williams at Montel Williams on Wednesdays. Sylvia Brown is on Montel Williams every Wednesday. And she'll be speaking about, you know, people will come, this person has died, that person has died, or they've been murdered, or whatever it is, and she will tell them what's going on with that. So that's another good introduction for it. I don't know if John Edwards still has his show on or not. I think it's still on. Is it still on, maybe? So maybe check into that, see if John Edwards still is on TV, because he's wonderful. He's really reputable. He's very, very good. Yeah. Once one is enlightened, how does the personality of one differ from the enlightened being? You still have personality. Is it different from the one before you were enlightened? Can't say. Really, can't say. I don't know if the personality has changed at all. You'd have to ask people that knew before. My internal, the perception, everything has shifted. But the basic personality, the way that one relates in the world, I'm not sure if that's changed or not. Perhaps. Maybe it has. I don't think it was so straightforward maybe before. You know, because there's always hesitation, you know, when you think, you know, someone's judging or someone this or someone that or, you know, which I think affects personality. But, I mean, everyone maintains some sort of, you know, what people see as a personality. Otherwise, there would be one cookie-cutter mold. You know, one cookie-cutter mold realized being, and that doesn't happen. You know, some are very gentle and very, you know, and some are just straightforward, straight down the line, boom, hard-hitting, and, you know. So I think that, you know, when realization takes place, just the all the barriers and the coverings are gone, and the suffering is gone. And when you look inside, you don't see, I don't see a persona as such. I recognize that other people see a persona. They're judging by the external. They see a body there. They see a body talking. It has some sort of a, you know, it's different from maybe the way someone else interacts. So they judge that being a persona. But see, I judge persona and ego as an attachment to a form or a, you know, and that there's none of that that remains.
Do you still get angry?
Oh, of course. Of course.
So then,
you've never been around some of the teachers, you know. Yeah, that still takes place. It's like a wave, a wash, a boom, and it's over. It's finished. Muktananda, if somebody would be disrespectful in satsang hall, would pick off his shoe and he'd be hurling it at him. And he'd aim to hit him. Yeah. Nityananda, his guru, said horrible things. He got fed up, tired with people. He, you know, they'd come and be bugging him. He'd turn his back on him, show him his butt crack. That was it. You know, and he would have a translator there that was saying, oh, Guruji is the end of the session. And actually what he was saying, and please excuse the language, but the direct translation was, tell the sister fuckers to go away. It's what he would say, literally. Tell the sister fuckers to go away, you know. So, yeah. Nisargadatta, one man would come. He came one time, and Nisargadatta was giving satsang, and this guy was, you know, kind of, he knew it all. And because of him, he said, I'm not giving any satsang for the next week till you leave. That's it. And everybody else had to sit there and suffer. He wouldn't say anything. He got very angry. Even Ramana. There was a boy that came to the ashram, and he stole something. Ramana slapped him. Yeah. So, yeah. Doesn't mean that one becomes like some robot or a stone. In fact, maybe the emotions are even purer. It's pure emotion at that point. But the difference is it doesn't run the life any longer. It's like a pebble in a lake. The ripple of it lasts a couple seconds and then that's it. You know, like kids. You know, they say the real life being becomes like a child. Same thing. You see a child, they can be really angry one second, and the next second they turn around and forgotten it all, and they're playing again. You know, it's like, you know. Yeah. So yeah, you know, the emotions, there can still be emotions there, but there's no attachment to them. Okay. We play out that Prarabdha karma, the karma we came in with life to play out, and that's it. It just plays out.
So it's not like you have to be a saint.
No, what's a saint?
Somebody who would never slap or curse or yell or never ever say
a... That's a Hollywood saint. Okay. That's the faux humility. Okay. the faux humility. No, you become a real person, you know, real being, a real, you know.
One of my...
There's no games anymore. There's no, you know, it's just straight. This is it. You live life. That's all.
One of my favorite qualities about Guruji, actually, is your ability to drop the F-bomb. I really like that in you. I have to admit it. I think it's great because I had the same perception about what, you know, a holy person would be like. And you realize it's just the reality is sometimes it's appropriate in a situation if you're angry. And you just got to say it like it is. It's just the truth of the matter sometimes, you know, which...
Exactly.
You know, and that's... It goes beyond the whole, oh, I'm so great and holy. But it's like, you know, sometimes you have to just call it like it is. And that's... Being angry, you know, is part of
this. It's part of life.
It's part of life, yeah.
It's part of life.
It's part of the moment you're in.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. So, yeah. And this is, you know, something you see, you know, in India... One of the big ashrams there, this one guy, he's like, oh, between these hours, he doesn't speak it. He comes out, and I'm so holy, and I'm so blessing you, and just so, you know, and it's like, you want to gag. Really. You want to gag. Because it's such a show. It is such a show. When somebody comes to that ashram that has money, man, they roll out the red carpet, paint his name. Such a show. I had one student that came. He wanted to go meet this guy. Okay, we'll go. And he's there and he's, well, what are you here for? And what are you giving? And what program are you wanting to support? I looked at him and said, I'm here to live life. That's it. He didn't want to have anything to do with me at that point because I wasn't coming there to volunteer, to give all the funds, to give all of this, to give all of that. At that point, he wanted nothing more to do with me. You know, so what is there is for a big sham, and he plays the part to the hilt. You know, plays the part to the hilt. I think he does a disservice to humanity by doing that. Really.
But see, it's just an example it's just an example of why I like you because I have been around a lot of people like that. I've been around, you know, I was a Jehovah's Witness growing up. There's a lot of that, a lot of people faking things. It's really awful, you know. And so when I hear you drop an F-bomb, it's like, it's great because it's just a moment of truth. It's the reality of the situation. There's no innuendos. It's just the way, you know.
Yeah, we don't need to cover over the reality of it. You know, it's like these anything. Like these teachers, like Nityananda or Nisargadatta or, you know, all of them. They get cleaned up.
Yeah.
After they pass, they write all these books about them and they clean up all this image. But when you're really around them, you know, it's a different story. It's like one man that was coming to see Ramana. He said, you know, when I'm with you, you're a real person. You're a genuine person.
It's paramount.
He goes, but when I'm away from you, then there's, you know, all of these, you know, all of these other ideas floating around. But when I'm with you, you're a real person. Well, this is the hope. We're not sitting here. A realized being doesn't sit here and float 10 feet off the ground. What I am, you are. Okay? You just step out of the suffering. You step out of the delusion. Okay? And then you live life. Life happens.
But a lot of people want to get caught up in that illusion, and that illusion sells to people.
Well, the illusion sells. Yeah. Yeah.
Being a Jehovah's Witness, I mean, you're surrounded by millions of people who are totally bought and sold into this religion and this way of thinking. And it's just, it's not the reality. And no. It's amazing how, like, you can live your whole life like
reality
that.
Reality is beautiful the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So that's why I say sometimes, you know, the perfection is in the imperfection. You know, if you get a pottery bowl that's just so evenly formed, I think the one that's misshapen is much more interesting. You know? It has its own quality, its own beauty, the way it is. You know? Everyone is interesting the way that they are. You know? Lord help if we all looked the same. It would be very boring. You know? It would be very boring. If they only had one type of flower in the world, how boring. Look at the beauty. We've got so many different types of varieties. So, yeah. Life is, you know, life is great the way it is. This is what happens. You know, at first you want to just get out. You think liberation is getting out of the world. I just want to be out of here. Because you're in suffering at that time. So you think liberation is getting out and going to heavenlies or other, you know, other existences or other realms or going to astral realms or whatever, you know. I just want to be out of here. Okay. And things fall away. Part of the journey, it feels like it's totally unreal here. You're entering a dream state. I'm manufacturing everything. Okay? But it passes, that passes too. Then you find out this is neither real nor unreal. And you see the fragrance of it for what it is. And that once there's liberation, why do you need to go anywhere? You've gone from hell to heaven. What could be better than the infinite experiences that you have here as well? They're very gritty, very, you know, hands-on, just, you know, nothing wrong with it. Enjoy it for what it is. Could any kind of fear be connected with the fear of death? Can any kind of fear be connected with fear of death? Being afraid of staying in a pitch black room. Well, that's fear of the unknown, I think. Being in a pitch black room and being afraid would be not so much fear of death, but fear of the unknown. People are really driven by fear of the unknown and fear of death. Because you feel like maybe I'm not safe. Huh? This is why liberation, this is why realization is so freeing, because it's realization is the life of all life and the death of all death. It's absolute. You know, if the world ends in a heartbeat, it doesn't matter, for still this is. And it's the essence of all being. So other worlds will come into existence. In some way, shape, or form. So all of these fears just gone, melted, vanished, boom. But yeah, so many people are driven by this fear of the unknown. So I say, you know, some of them, they hang on to their illness. Why? Not that they like suffering, but at least it's familiar. And it's their whole life story. If you're the suffering persona, the suffering victim, it's your story. My God, if I let go of this, then what? At least I know what this is. Some women are in abusive relationships, they don't leave because at least I know what this is. Maybe I can't do it on my own. Maybe I can't, you know. That unknown keeps them trapped. But if you can let go of something, you have room for others to come in. You have room for movement. If you cling to that fear, you're stifled. You're stagnated. Okay? Don't stifle. Don't stagnate. Because when something stagnates, what happens? Comes slimy and it's nasty and it stinks and it's like, bleh. Huh? So be willing to move forward and to let go. If you can let go, then life is an adventure. If you can see it as an adventure rather than, oh my God, what might happen? The only way you enter an adventure is if you don't know what's going to happen. Okay? Better to be on an adventure. Okay? Jump into the great mystery. So, yeah, there's nothing to fear. A dark room is just a dark room. Say it's only dark. Okay, I'm safe. It's only darkness. Were you? Oh, ow. I'm glad you've gotten over that. Yay, yay. Yay, let's hear one for that. Yay. Yeah, but when you find yourself in that type of thing, you know, if it's dark room, then just say, it's okay, so it's dark, you know. That's all, but I'm safe. I'm fine. So question yourself, so what is this fear? What is there to fear in this? Question it. Yes. Then you go into the breath. This is why I give you the breath to do. You go into the breath, let go. Go into the relaxed breathing. Calm yourself, step back, and then look again. Before and after, I put the lights on. Preferably before. Because you need to confront it eventually. This is part of the path. If you watch the movie, and I love the movie, The Little Buddha, where he's sitting towards the end of the film and everything is coming at him. All the fears are coming at him. And he has to just sit with it and not flinch from it. The fired arrows, the flaming arrows that are coming at him. Well, at that time, you know, when you're doing the meditation or whatever, you feel like it's very real. Well, maybe I'm going to die from it. You have to just sit through it. And then you find out there was nothing to fear. We're manufacturing it. There's nothing to fear. But the only way to get beyond it is to confront it. To not run away from it. Because every time you run away from it, what happens? It grows in intensity. We're feeding it. Making it more valid. Okay. So yeah, do it before the lights are on. At death, the body naturally falls away. Is there a point when the mind falls away and is replaced with a new one? No, it's not replaced with a new one. It's at that point just direct consciousness. But the mental thing, the mental mind is what? It's just thoughts that come and go, one on top of another. You enter pure awareness, pure consciousness.
So what I was trying to get at is, like, during some lives, some people have a genius mind, and sometimes they don't. So is that just the same mind that builds on itself, or how does that work?
I think it just happens to depend on where they're at in their search, you know, how many layers they've let go of, what they come in with, because everyone comes in with potential. Different, you know, potentialities. You have different seeds you come in with. Depends on the life before that, how much of this nonsense you were able to let go of or how many more coverings you pulled on. So you come in with some potentialities. So, yeah, the way that you think, you know, can be different in every life, depending on, you know, the process depends on what the experiences are in that life and the, you know, tendencies that you come in with and then what you gravitate to. And on that, we will close satsang for today. Take a break. Have some chai. It's time for tea. So thank you for coming. I welcome you all with great love and respect. Thank you.